Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hey, welcome in to the Gridiron Show. Gridiron live after week two of the NFL season. Michael McQuaid, Ollie Connolly, and welcome in, folks, if you're watching live or listening on a Monday morning podcast on your journey to work, wherever you may be in the world. Ollie, welcome in. What a week. I mean, my God.
I know, one of those ones where just showered in the most dreadful coaching decisions across the land. You know, it was a lot of bad football baked around just incompetence running throughout every game. I felt like there wasn't one game where I went, you know, this is being wonderfully coached, wonderfully time managed. All of them were just all over the place, and it is a great reminder, one, of how fun the sport is, too, for someone like me, you know, who is so involved with the X's and O's of the game, former coach, all that kind of stuff. It is nice every once in a while for it to come down to whether or not your coach is a bozo, whether your coach knows how to use timeouts or not, whether or not he understands what the play clock is and the function of those things, that maybe he can draw up some beautiful plays on the whiteboard, but when he gets out there, he freezes in the moment. So just a fun day all around.
Yeah, definitely the play clock thing is going to be an issue that we have to talk about tonight, but or this morning, but a warm welcome into everyone watching live or listening on the podcast. Ollie, first off, let's talk about Beer 52 for everyone listening. How does a free case of beer sound? Our pals at Beer 52 are offering you a free case of 8 beers. All you need to do is to pay the postage and packaging. Beer52.com/gridiron. Your beer tonight, Ollie, is?
I have a modern pale ale. Hazy, golden, juicy. I believe it's called Here Comes the Sun. Bibliotech. I understand, Michael, that
Hold on. I have the exact same one.
Hey, look at that. And that wasn't any kind of partnership situation. That's pretty good. These are like standalone one-offs, right? This one, I believe, you can only get through Beer 52. Some of the beers you get, certainly in the little gift set they sent to us, they're like exclusive to Beer 52. And I had a Pilsner from them on Friday night. I had far too many Pilsners, I should say, from Beer 52 on Friday night, preparing for the college football weekend. And they were exclusive to Beer 52, and now I'm very, very upset because I should not have ripped through those as fast as I did do, because now I need to reorder some more stuff.
Yeah, love the box that I got as well, and I am having, ironically, the exact same beer, Beer Bibliotheque, Here Comes the Sun, and it's nice. It's especially nice after a busy day of work. Let's jump right into it. The link is at the bottom of the screen or in the bio on the podcast if you're listening back. Trey Lance, Ollie. Now, we have to address this. There is a magazine behind me which says the year of Trey Lance starts now. He went to the ground after being tackled on a QB run, and it now seems, if you want to confirm this to me now, that Kyle Shanahan's confirmed, he's broke his ankle, and that's him out for the season. And I know for a lot of people listening, wherever you are in the world, Niners fans or just general NFL fans will be gutted for Trey Lance, who now, I think you were the one that tweeted that he's only going to have played maybe 3 to 5 games in 3 years, which is devastating for him.
Yeah, you're taking the totality of the 3 years, so you have the COVID season at North Dakota State, so he only does the one game in that final North Dakota State game, a game they only put on exclusively for him as kind of a thing for his draft selection. Then obviously he sits the majority of the rookie season. He plays the 2 games. Now he plays the 1 game plus a quarter today and then has the ankle injury. And it's just, I mean, it's devastating for him, obviously. It looked like the Dak situation from the very off. And this is a guy whose game is obviously built around athleticism. And, you know, we can go through the Jimmy of everything. We can go through where this leaves the Niners. But just for Trey Lance, I mean, beyond the obvious human side of it in terms of the injury and the recovery and just how much it stings for him, having put so much effort in to get to the league, having to sit for the year and then getting his big opportunity and ending that way. Just in terms of his development as a player, if you remove it from that side we discussed there, is, man, that's not a lot of football in a lot of years. You know, he didn't play much football in high school. He barely played football in college. Now he's barely played football in the NFL. And the development cycle in the NFL is already shortened, right? We kind of know after 2 years now with these guys, right, whether they're going to be good enough or not. The rookie extension starts to linger on the horizon. By year three, you start having initial discussions before you get into one of these Lamar Jackson situations. And that's going to be a completely different timeline for the Niners. And who knows what kind of player is going to come back. Like, he was a role player anyway. There were some pretty substantive issues going into the season that we thought maybe you would see progression over the second half of the season. The Niners were willing to forego some of the early season issues with the hope of what the ceiling could be down the line, maybe by January and playoff time. And now that's just completely wiped out. And maybe he comes back like a different player. Look, Dak was a totally different quarterback from the guy he was pre that ankle injury to the guy Dak Prescott is now. And then obviously you get the issue where one injury, particularly in the lower body, can lead to a whole bunch of other injuries. So it's just, any way you look at it, it just stinks from all angles.
Home debut, a couple of minutes in as well. And ironically, there's two factors for me. It's the first one off, and I know we'll talk about this in a minute, the whole restructure and keeping Jimmy Garoppolo there, which now looks like some sort of masterstroke, even though there was so much talk and debate all offseason. I mean, the amount of conversations that me and you and the rest of the team in Gridiron have had around this quarterback controversy off camera is nuts. And I did think, like, I would have loved, and I still do want to see Trey Lance proceed and do well at that position in San Fran, but I did think we would see Jimmy at some point this season if he wasn't traded. That being said, Ollie, Kyle Shanahan on Monday said, quote, "Just like all players, we listen to anybody on anything," and that was, but he was talking about trades. So it's just crazy how this league can change in 4 and 5 days. And now they look at maybe opening up that offense a bit, because it was quite, I don't want to say limited, but it wasn't amazing tonight. But they got the job done against Seattle with Jimmy there. And now they have to go on into week three and completely reevaluate their offense. And maybe Jimmy might be allowed to train with the first teamers now. Who knows?
I don't think they have to completely change everything. I saw that a lot about what will they do now going back to Jimmy. I mean, they've been running that offense for years with Jimmy. They evolved it with Jimmy. They were trying something different with Trey Lance. Obviously, everyone will have seen the run-pass splits and the difference between Jimmy playing and Trey playing. When Trey plays, they run the ball like 70% of the time. And when Jimmy plays, they throw the ball about 70% of the time. I don't think it's that difficult for them to chop and change from one system to the other. I think it's pretty easy. They're basically running the same plays. There are certain plays available to them when Trey Lance is available, and those plays change slightly when Jimmy Garoppolo goes in. Most of that stuff is option-based football. And that's still in the playbook, irrespective of who's the quarterback. Just one is a triple option, which involves no one else on the offense anyway. And one is a two-way go option, which is either hand the ball off or throw the ball. So changing any of the verbiage, any of the timing, all that stuff doesn't matter. And then, yeah, there's the voice and the huddle voice at the line of scrimmage stuff, but they've obviously known Jimmy forever. So it does go to show it's somewhat ironic that they held him all off season in Canada, hope that someone would have an injury, right? That was why they held on to his rights all that time and why they were having the back and forth with him over the whole offseason. And it's ironic that they were the ones who had the devastating quarterback injury, and now they need Jimmy Garoppolo to step up. But I think it's funny because in the short term, I mean, we all saw the game that the offense clicked much better when Garoppolo's there. He takes the easy layups that Trey Lance was finding difficult. Right? It's that simple. They moved to Trey Lance because they thought it would elevate the ceiling because he could push the ball down the field better. And in the world of defense we're facing now, that's something you need. And he was a rushing threat. And that is another thing is just essential with the style of defense we're seeing now. It wasn't a knock on Jimmy Garoppolo or even saying that Trey Lance was better than Jimmy Garoppolo in the time being. It was that skill set fit where the league was going more. And so they wanted to be on that evolutionary cycle. Garoppolo is a better quarterback right now than him. So short term, it makes him a better team. Now, does it make them better in January? That's the concern. We have seen the limits with Garoppolo. He's just not that guy when you get to January, February in the playoffs. So that will remain the concern, right? And they are good enough. They've got Super Bowl win before. They're good enough to scheme around it. They got good enough players to make plays irrespective of Jimmy Garoppolo. But it's not as if it was silly to move on for Garoppolo. Now they're better with Jimmy. It's like they were always going to be better in the short term with him anyway. That was a play for January, so the calculus is still the same.
It'll be interesting where they are in January with Jimmy Garoppolo, and hopefully George Kittle's playing by then. Second straight week out this week with a groin injury. And you couldn't make this up, Ollie. They now go into Denver next week and play Nathaniel Hackett. I'm sure they'll be counting down the days to that, like many people in Denver are. The one question I did want to ask you before we move on to the Colts here is, what do you think their ceiling is now with Garoppolo? Do you look at it very much the same? Because I know you've spoken about it there, about Trey and Jimmy G. They've got a guy there that has played in the Super Bowl with the Niners, almost won the Super Bowl with them against the Chiefs, and he was in the NFC Championship game last year. So while he has not completed or fulfilled that exact victory in terms of winning the Super Bowl, he does have experience of being there. And I mean, if you look at, like, for example, the Cowboys, where Dak Prescott's out for how many weeks, and I know Cooper Rush had a decent enough performance from that, and they get over the line tonight, at least they have a quarterback there that they can go, okay, well, he's been here, he knows his team, he knows his offense, surely that's a pro for them as well.
Yeah, I mean, if you go through just now and do the NFC quarterbacks whilst Dak is out, Garoppolo's probably fifth, sixth, somewhere in there. I mean, the NFC stinks. So their ceiling, their expectations shouldn't change. That's a championship caliber roster. He is good enough to get you to championship games. Now, he's not going to decide the championship games. That's the difference, right? Mahomes decided the Super Bowl. The defense has basically decided the NFC title game. He wasn't good enough to overcome structural flaws in the offense and how good the Ravens defense was in the championship game. So he's just not a championship game decider, which means someone else on the team has to be, whether it's the entire defense, which is the way football is in 2022, or the someone super special on that offense, which would probably be Debo or Kittle, right? So that's just where we're at. Now, it getting into playoffs, it just rolls the dice, isn't it? That's the reality. And he is good enough to get you into the playoff and then take the roll of the dice. So, you know, he's got as far in NFC championship runs as Aaron Rodgers at this point, right? So to me, the expectations of them don't change. They have championship expectations at least to get to the NFC title game. Now, you know, I'm not saying that if they don't get there, it's a disappointment, but they are good enough, I think, still to get back there. They have every other piece that is needed.
I look forward to your Jimmy Garoppolo, Shanahan, Lynch article this week dropping on Tuesday or Wednesday. Did you see my emails dropping in with the read optional? Okay, let's talk about the Colts, because we were joking about this last week, saying, well, the last time these two teams played each other in Jacksonville, everyone thought the Indy were going to roll in and win and the playoffs, and then they got completely destroyed. Ollie, I was shocked that the performance, not just of Matt Ryan, but I guess everyone today for the Colts. Matt Ryan, 195 yards passing, 16 of 30 completions, 3 interceptions on the day. Trevor Lawrence, not too bad, but the Colts are in a bit of a sticky predicament now. Do you think, and this might sound ridiculous, do you think Matt Ryan has regressed a bit in the offseason, or do you think he's just in a new situation where he's struggling, or can they save this in a few weeks?
Oh, he's really struggling. I mean, the big thing to note was they didn't have their starting two wide receivers, right? Their top two guys, Pittman and Pierce. Both those guys, complete freaks on the outside, and they increase your margin of error. And that is a team coming into the season who had no depth at wide receiver. It was the giant question mark hanging over them all offseason. They were super duper arrogant about their young wide receivers, and it turns out they all stink, as expected. And they both two wide receivers weren't playing, and no one could get any kind of separation. I posted this spider chart to Twitter that I think people, if they're listening, should go and have a look at, because it is genuinely hilarious. It basically takes the NFL next gen tracking data, which is all the chips and the pads of the players, and shows you the average amount of separation from each receiver from the cornerback or whoever covering them during the game. The league average is 2.91 yards, so just about 3 yards. That's kind of the throwing window in the NFL. They have no one getting even close to that. They have some people on zero. They have Mo Alie-Cox, 1.86 yards. Patman, under 1 yard. Strachan, 1.64 yards. So that is already brutal. And then we spoke about on Friday doing the preview show, like, Matt Ryan just isn't that guy anymore. You know, he's not someone who can fit the ball into tight windows. He's had to change his game. He just doesn't have the zip on the ball anymore. So he's become a landmark thrower, which means everything has to be clicking. It is late career Peyton Manning. It's what happened with the Colts when they had Phillip Rivers. Like, and when they got Ryan, I think they thought, because last season he could still move pretty well in the pocket. There was still just enough torque on the ball. That's just not there anymore. And that stunned me, because I thought we were getting the guy from Atlanta last year. There was at least 2 years left of playing a kind of the second Hall of Fame part of Tom Brady's career before he rediscovered his arm strength. You know, that mid-window just before the Roethlisberger decline, not the final Roethlisberger year, not the final Manning year. And we're getting into grenade territory with him, where it has to be up and over, drop it to a point and hope someone can go get it. And to do that, you need, like I said, everything to be clicking on offense, right? Run game, scheme, all that stuff. And guys have to be open. You can't drop it in a bucket and have someone within a yard of them, because then it becomes a fight for the ball. And you're either going to turn the ball over or they're going to break the play up. And the percentage you suggested there show exactly what happens. So that they should be really, really worried. And what's further to that is offensive line issues and just not running the ball. I do not know what's going on with that staff, where you have Jonathan Taylor, you have this offensive line that's struggling. The best thing you can do is slam the ball into a wall and hope for the best and hope that Jonathan Taylor can hit daylight. That's what they should be doing. Instead, they're dropping back over and over again with this depleted receiving core.
The one thing that I've got down from my notes sitting with my glasses half down writing during this game was we didn't see much blitzing at all, and the Jaguars seemed to consistently get the receivers into like unfair situations. You've seen Zed Jones, Christian Kirk get lots of yardage, where that sort of plan from Indianapolis for me is not going to work for them down the stretch. And we, like, I think we both picked them to win the AFC South, at least. I think we all did. It was a sweep and we got massive abuse online for it. And now they're sitting 0-1-1. And I agree. This was a team that relied consistently on the run with Jonathan Taylor and the backups last year. They're not doing as well on the run this year. 54 yards today for Jonathan Taylor on 9 carries. They've got rid of Philip Lindsay, and they've got, obviously, Hines had 1 yard. Sorry, 1 carry for 0 yards, and Dillon had 1 carry for 3 yards. That's not going to win you a game if you're playing Jacksonville, if you're playing the Packers or whoever in this league. And I think they're in a really, really worrying position now in that division, because, look, Jacksonville weren't incredible, but you can see they're improving. For all the faults that the Colts have, Jacksonville are on a journey and they're trying to improve. And if you can see social media on Sunday night, people crying out for Nick Foles. That's where it goes for me. Like, no, there was literally nonsense. People on Twitter asking for Nick Foles, insane. Which is nuts, isn't it?
Yeah, that's just Twitter being Twitter. I don't buy anything to that. The problem they have is they have a load of really good players and they're all playing terribly. And that is really, really concerning, because that speaks to some kind of concern with the culture, something going on. They got their tails whooped last year in Jacksonville in an embarrassing way, and they all hid behind the shield of Carson Wentz, right? Carson Wentz took all of that flack on board. The owner, you know, wobbling onto his private jet to do a video saying that it's all Carson Wentz's fault, essentially. Everyone else is fine. We were going to win a Super Bowl. It's all Carson Wentz's fault. You go through some of the stuff they said after the game, those players, the disrespect they put on Jacksonville, and to come out in week two and to play like that. Ryan Kelly's a really good player. Quentin Nelson's a really good player. Jonathan Taylor's really good. DeForest Buckner's really good. Quincy Pay is really, really good. Stephon Gilmore was a defensive player of the year and is still playing at a pretty decent level, right? They've got so many good players and they are not playing. I don't know what that is. And this is not like some kind of weird up in the air thought exercise. They are not lining up properly. This is the most basic stuff imaginable. They are not getting off the ball. Something is strange there. And look, this happens with a lot of teams. And I think through the fog of the season, they still have more talent than anyone in the AFC South. They're not 0-2. It's 0-1-1. I know they've been terrible against two teams people think are pretty bad. I still think they'll figure it out. I think that staff's good enough. I think they have more good players than the rest of the division. But it has been as bad a start as could be imagined.
They have the Kansas City Chiefs in week 3, and currently the Chiefs are 3-point favorites, and we can talk about that on the pick show next week. But as it stands, Ollie, that's incredible value. Do you think if we got to week 4 or week 5 though, with Frank Reich and Chris Ballard, that maybe Jim Irsay might do something? You were talking there about him throwing Carson Wentz under the bus. I don't know if you've seen the social media tonight. He was sitting outside on a table and signing footballs for all the Colts fans, but you could hear audible boos. And I'm talking booze, booze, booze. It was like something from a TV show, and he's not going to be a happy bunny. So he'll be a bit like Jerry Jones was last week after the first Cowboys game of the season.
I mean, what's he going to do in season? It's, you can change the GM. He's not going to have the chance to do anything. Change the head coach. Who are you going to get? Who's going to be better than Frank Reich? Person doesn't exist. What they are suffering for here is the long-term consequence of doing this year-to-year cycle. And that every year is an uphill battle because they have to figure out exactly what works for everyone. And it doesn't really click in until week 7, week 8. And we've done this with them for years now, where they'll put together a 2-3 week run and everyone says, oh, dark horse, you know, you don't want to go into Indianapolis in the playoffs. And then we get to the playoffs and Indianapolis is nowhere to be seen because they've missed the playoffs again. And it's been going this way since 2014. I think they've had one or two playoff games since 2014.
Yeah,
I think that's right. And I think we are all conditioned to, they're supposed to be good because of Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck. And they've just not been since 2014. So, I still think it's a long, long season. The AFC South is still not good. It's not as if the AFC South is magically really good now. The Texans are mediocre. Jacksonville is mediocre. The Titans are mediocre, looking towards being good. And the Colts are mediocre right now towards being bad. So that's not a far way to bridge over the course of the season.
I enjoyed watching the Jags, and I think that says it all about my enjoyment of certain football games. Talking about enjoying our podcast on Carson Wentz this week, comes out on Tuesday. That was a joke. Some of his plays tonight were amazing, Ollie. And I know we could probably have a documentary on some of them, and I've seen some of your tweets about throwing the ball and stuff. Let's talk about the big game in the early window. And we were talking during the week about why you don't want some sort of certain games to be on so early in the season. I almost felt like we were being spoiled seeing the Chargers Chiefs on that first Amazon game on Thursday night, but that was for that reason. The Baltimore Ravens going up against the Miami Dolphins, which finished in a 42-38 win for the Dolphins, who were down 35-14 at the end of the third. First off, Ollie, what a game. 6 touchdowns for Tua, 3 touchdowns, but some incredible play at certain points from Lamar Jackson, including the 70-odd-yard run. Never mind talking about the Dolphins' wide receiver core. This game had literally everything for the neutral. So enjoyable. But how do you give up 28 points in the fourth quarter? Please tell me, man. How did they do it?
I mean, it's never been done before, so I don't know how. I mean, it was Tua's day, obviously. And the thing with Tua is, his role for the Dolphins essentially is to be like Drew Brees, is hit all the throws. And I know that sounds simplistic and dumb, but guys are wide open in that system. And that's the way Drew Brees played his entire career, which was, I hit every throw I'm supposed to hit, and then maybe I make 2 that I'm not supposed to hit a game, and that is the difference between us winning and losing. I don't have to go out there and be Justin Herbert and hit 6 throws a game that are crazy throws that drag my team, you know, to within a chance of winning in Arrowhead. That's not who Tua has to be. He's got these guys that are wide open all over the field, and he hit them, right? The Gesicki throw is an unbelievable throw. The final throw of the game where he's moving and rolling, I think he hits Jalen Waddle, right? The killer shot for the final touchdown. That's a throw that he's not necessarily expected to hit in terms of the placement of the ball, and he hits it. And then he did hit the majority of the layups this week, which he did not hit last week, particularly down the final stretch of the game after struggling in the first half. What was really interesting is, one, there is just no way to cover this wide receiving core. It does not exist. There is no way you can go and design. No one has the athletes to keep up with the two of them together. To have Hill and Waddle next to each other, and they've been really smart about how they position them together, and then particularly where they put the third person off of them to make it so your shell is just completely compromised at the snap. There's no amount of rotating or doubling you can do when they're both not the two perimeter guys, and then they'll balance the formation other times and have one on one side, one on the other, and no one else in the vicinity. So they make everything really tight and congested, stick one guy really wide, one other guy really wide. And if they get spread, they make sure those two guys are together. And in both of those situations, which is kind of the bedrock of that offense, you are completely compromised in terms of coverage. There's nothing you can do schematically to roll one certain way to ensure you've got the right body position, the right athletes on those guys. It just does not exist. And you can see it in the figures. Remember I mentioned those average separation numbers before with the Colts. Tyreek Hill, have you seen these numbers? Have I shown you these?
No, I could have sworn I seen you were talking about, like, once he actually caught the ball, the increase on his yardage was ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. His average amount of separation from the person covering him in the league average is 2.9, was 4 yards. He was open by 4 yards on average That's not just like, oh, those are the good plays. Those are the average plays. He is wide, wide open. Jaylen Waddle, 3 yards. These guys are wide open. There is nothing you can do to stop them. And all Tua has to do is hit the throws to wide open players. And that's great. That's what he did in the second half. And the last thing I'll say is, one, the Ravens defense flagged really badly. They were getting after him early in the game. They struggled as the game went along. Injuries took over in the secondary. They got really tired. I saw a cool tweet from NFL's Next Gen Stats that the Ravens defense ran more yards, not in terms of yardage on the field, in terms of the chips and the pads that track how far they're physically running, than any team has ever run. Ever. Because of how much having Waddle and Hill force you to, one, get depth in the defense, right, to try and keep them in front of you. And then it's all these crosses and these deep breaking concepts. You're just running a long way. And you could see by the end of the game, those guys were huffing and puffing. They could not keep up with the pace of the game. And it was really, really easy for Tua in that fourth quarter, outside of two or three big boy throws where he had to, you know, really raise his game to a new standard. And he did it. And I'm delighted because I like Tua. And the conversation around him, I think, has absolutely nothing to do with him. It's like this weird dynamic about how you view football. It's got nothing to do with the player himself. So I'm just really pleased that he got his day.
I know you've been very sort of vocal on that relationship with Tua and his new head coach, Mike McDaniel, as well. In the offseason, it's a great read if people do check out the Read Optional website with all these content. One thing for me from reading up on the Dolphins and reading up on Mike McDaniel is him trying to improve to his confidence down the stretch in certain situations. And I'm not going to lie to you, whenever it was before they got the final touchdown of the game, I genuinely thought, does he have the guts to take this over the line? You know, they're sitting here, they're trying to win this game after coming back, but can the Dolphins actually go and win this game? And I loved watching it. Like, I mean, I love watching Lamar Jackson. I mean, that 75-yarder to Bateman was unbelievable. But Tua and that offense, you know, you said it, you got those two players there, but it's almost like the X factor where you can't really prepare for that. And something tells me, like, the Buffalo Bills, sorry, are sitting at home tonight going, oh, wait a minute, this is interesting. This could get interesting in a couple of weeks.
They have the best safety duo in the league, so the calculus is a bit different for them in terms of what they're able to do with their defense. You can layer in a way, I don't want to get too deep in the weeds there, but you can layer the defense in a way to do stuff to them, right? The Patriots tried it in week one. The Patriots played really well on defense the second half of that game against the Dolphins. Now, those guys were wide open all the time, and Tua just decided not to do it. And I think the confidence thing for McDaniel, you know, there was 4 or 5 plays in the Patriots game where 3-4 yards before he's even open, Tyreek Hill's hand is up because he's got this Randy Moss situation of he knows when he's open because he knows how much quicker he is than everyone else. And it will just take Tua some time to realize, oh, I can just let that go, because he's used to having to say, even with all those freaks he played over Alabama, let me give it another beat, another beat, another beat. Actually, I don't want to do that. It's too risky. It's not a risk with Jaylen Waddle and Tyreek Hill. It's the right decision to launch the ball 25 yards down the field. They'll go get it. You know, throw it to a patch of grass you think no one can reach, and they'll come down with it. And that was the great thing about that fourth quarter, because they were so in a hole, it was like, well, bleep it. What else am I going to do? I'm not going to avoid the deep shot and just take the check down because we're beating the Patriots 14-3, and I can do that. It's like, we're getting clubbed. This is a reputational game for me, essentially. You know, people are going to start writing me off. It's the end of Tua. Are they going to trade for Lamar Jackson? Are they going to go and try and get Tom Brady? All this stuff. And so he was in bleep it mode. And it was great to see, and I hope that he stays on that course. I think Mike McDaniel will be so much happier that they won that way with that historic comeback and him forced to play that way than if they'd just gone out there and beat them 24-3 and it was a defensive shutdown the way they beat them a year ago. I think that'll be so much better for him long-term, for them long-term. It's like, hey, man, you see, if you just throw the ball to any spot on the field, you've got Mike Gesicki, you got Jaylen Waddle, you got Tyreek Hill, and those guys can go get it in spots no one else can.
The future is bright in Miami. You said one quarterback there. Let's talk about him, Tom Brady. There's so many things we can talk about here. Obviously, the Bucs getting the 20-10 win. Tom Brady has scored 2 passing touchdowns this season. Now, I have to give it to him today. There was a significant amount of players missing. Obviously, Chris Godwin, Julio Jones wasn't available for him to throw the ball downfield to. That was a really, really strange game in New Orleans. It was a bit like a UFC match at one point. The one thing for me, man, is Brady is so skinny or something. Has he? What's going on? Are you some sort of nutritional expert? He walked in and he looked like a man that did not want to be there. He looked like he was walking in, like, Okay, and then I don't know. He just it's a really intriguing thing because obviously they play the Packers next, and depending on how the Packers play in Sunday Night Football, pre-recorded, of course. Will it be a shootout? Because he's only got over, I think he had 190 yards today, in the early 200s last week in terms of passing. I'm intrigued, man, to see what they can actually do.
Yeah, well, they got to see as well what the situation is with Mike Evans. Obviously, he gets ejected, he gets in a fight. We'll know from the NFL tomorrow if he's suspended or not and how long for. And it's just such a bizarre situation. And you factor that with the messaging or the statement or the report that came out earlier in the day that he's not going to be practicing on Wednesdays anymore. Those are now personal days for Tom Brady. And I'm sure he's had similar situations before in New England where it's a lighter day for him anyway. Wednesday would be in more of a treatment day. And maybe it's just being framed or billed differently. And now he's doing his treatment because he has his own staff anyway, right? Maybe he's just not doing it at the facility anymore. And you earn these things when you're ready to ever do it, right? It is one rule for you and one rule for everyone else when you're the best ever play the game. But that it is weird, and it's weird for someone who is homicidally competitive. And it's like it's confusing to me that he would come back and then look so disengaged in the process. You know, if he was coming back for one more year, I thought it would have been hyper-focused, scorched earth, all that kind of stuff. The way he was that last season, where it looked like that was probably the right time to go out, right? Going down a valiant effort in an NFC title game. You were not the problem. It would look like another great Brady comeback. It was a defensive mistake. And you went out having an MVP caliber season, just as good as Aaron Rodgers could have won the MVP. And he said he's returned this year, and he just looks, I mean, like I said, one, he looks physically different. God knows what's going on there. God, I don't even want to speculate. Don't open us up to the lawyers. You got all the family stuff, got all the personal drama, and you've got the team drama. And it's such a bizarre situation. And it will end inevitably with him hoisting the Lombardi in February, because that's what he does.
If I'm standing beside you in Arizona and I look at you and that's happening, I'm just going to laugh my head off, man. It is really strange. Because the Tom Brady that I remember, and this is not that long ago, is the one that, and don't get me wrong, I'm sure he still is, but one where you can see, not just from his play, but from his interviews, from his persona, that he's really motivated and really wants to excel in his game. I'm not getting that vibe. And that's maybe just me being a complete hater, Ollie. It could be, and he could go out next week and score 4 or 5 passing touchdowns himself against the Packers. But I don't know, I do agree with you. You know, like what else did he have to give last year? I guess maybe if he looks at certain quarterbacks that have sealed off, like Peyton Manning obviously had a shocking year, but he still got to go out on top. I personally think Brady should have walked away when he won.
On top.
Well, he won the Super Bowl. You know what I mean?
Like he crawled off the field, disheveled and broken. And
yeah,
now
but it was hard to watch.
Now, yeah, he can't even stand up anymore. I don't think that was for anyone a championship glorious moment.
Hand it off to CJ. It'll be sweet. No, but you know what I mean? Like he at least had that said. Well, look, he was like, I went out a champion.
Yeah, because
whereas
Peyton was chasing legacy because he only ever won one. I mean, Tom Brady had nothing to prove. He had 7. There was no need for the return beyond the fact he loves it and he wants to keep. That is the strange part. It's as if he's returned to get out of the house. It's like, well, couldn't he have just gone and done the Fox games? You know, he has a deal to go to Fox to be the highest paid broadcaster on earth and in history. And he's choosing to be out there looking miserable. Now, we talked before about the Colts working their way through a fog. I do think people misremember this Brady Brooks situation because he's always there at the end holding the trophy. They've been terrible to start the season. Basically, every year he's been there, right? They were really good to open last year against the Cowboys, and they had this flat line part from the midpoint of the season. We started getting rumors of Brady and Arians don't see eye to eye. You go back to the very first season, it was really sticky for 6, 7, 8 weeks. They couldn't figure out what offense to run, what language to use. It was a bit of a mess. They've had a coaching change this offseason. They had the weird stuff with him. I think it's just going to take some time. I think they will be absolutely fine by week 7, week 8. And they'll just be roasting people and we'll be back to where we are with him again. This is just the league, man. The league's really hard. The Saints have had his number for years now, particularly with Dennis Allen. They run a specific brand of defense. They play basically 2-man the entire game. And I haven't seen the all-22 for this game yet, but I'm sure I've seen it by the time we talk later in the week. But I can assure you, based on what Dennis Allen has done in the past, is that it's 2-man. They beat the shit out of people at the line of scrimmage. They bank on their front four getting home. They have one of the best front fours in the league. They have a really talented secondary, and that's just what they do. And he's struggled against it every single time he's played them. So I don't think it's like an unusual thing that he would have a bit of a meltdown against the Saints.
Talking about Dennis Allen, talking about the Saints team, it was a bit like It was a bit feisty in the third quarter. I still don't know what happened there or why punches were. I mean, I can't wait to hear some sort of mic'd up audio or something. I'm sure it'll never come out until it doesn't need to be heard anymore. But that was insane. And it suddenly was just putting TV and you're like, what is going on here? And Brady was fired up. I mean, that was as the most fired up I've seen him in a long time. The one thing I will say about the Saints is, for all about Tom Brady and his goatness, Jameis Winston found a way today to turn back time.
Please.
Three interceptions.
Yeah.
Oh man, but they really missed Kamara, didn't they today? You could see it massively. It was just a gaping hole.
Well, that offense doesn't have any juice anyway. Galvin Kamara is the juice. So when you don't have him, you're in trouble. When you have Jameis having a bad Jameis day, you're in trouble. I mean, I refuse to criticize a player who's playing with three broken backbones and is probably juiced out of his eyeballs and can't even see where he's going because he's got so much Toradol flowing through his veins. So yeah, I'm going to give Jameis Winston a pass on that one. He's got a broken back and he's playing out there. So
he doesn't look happy. Game.
Yeah, he probably doesn't even know where he is, honestly.
I seen one where he fell down on the ground and his face was just like, oh my God, I have to get up here sort of thing. I mean, it was like getting out of bed in the Monday morning. It was funny. Like,
it's a searing indictment of Taysom Hill, by the way. The guy's back is broken and they would rather roll Jameis out there unable to move than they would just give Taysom Hill a job for a week or two. I mean, they have Andy Dalton on staff, right? Is he injured or something? I've not seen anything. Like, why is Andy Dalton not just playing?
I will investigate that and let you know in the morning, boss. Mm-hmm. Right, finally, well, actually, let me just put this across right now. You and me both had bets up today. I done the over in the Dolphins, Ravens game. I mean, of course, that was the over. And then you done Patriots minus, I think it was 2.5. So congratulations, yeah. Patriots get the win. So one thing that I know you were very vocal on last week was Zach Taylor and certain decision-making skills that he has and what he done last week in Pittsburgh. Or sorry, in Cincinnati against Pittsburgh. The Bengals are now 0-2, and Cooper Rush at quarterback in the decision-making bowl, I'm going to call it now, Zach Taylor against Mike McCarthy. Jerry Jones is a happy man, and the Cowboy season is back for 5 minutes at least. Man, Zach Taylor, like I'll give you an example. Somebody tweeted tonight saying Mike McCarthy versus Zach Taylor was like watching two one-legged men trying to win an ass-kicking contest. I mean, what's going on with this? It's what a come down for them, seriously.
It's just, it's the same old stuff. I don't even know how many more times I can repeat myself before I bore myself, before I bore the audience. It's the exact same offense. It's the exact same issues. They're playing in empty the entire game. They're getting their ass kicked up front. All that investment in the offensive line, still terrible. Just Lyle Collins getting worked the entire games by Micah Parsons. And that can happen. Micah Parsons is quite literally the best pass rusher on earth right now. It's like not even really close. You know, TJ Watt's injured now and the Boses are amazing, but I mean, it doesn't get any better than Micah Parsons. The only time Micah Parsons is the best edge rusher on earth is when he's asked to drop into coverage and he becomes like the best coverage linebacker in the league. So that can happen. The game plan around that cannot be okay. Then we're going to run tunnel screens. Then we're going to get into empty again. I'm going to expose Joe some more. I mean, they had two plays where they forgot to block Micah Parsons. I mean, it's getting beyond a joke at this point that obviously all the sequencing is wrong. And, maybe on other shows I'll go into even more detail than I can be bothered to tonight. Just the macro perspective is that they have now lost two games to teams quarterbacked by Mitch Trubisky and Cooper Rush. Now, I know that the Bengals offense does not play against Mitch Trubisky and Cooper Rush, but that team with that talent, Boyd, Higgins, Chase, Burrow, Mixon, should not be being outscored by Cooper Rush. It's just that simple. I've detailed it now how many times. They are the most predictable team in the league offensively. I've posted their tendencies online. Free, open source. I have the specific tendencies. You can go find them, and they are still committing those same tendencies. You can find out specifically by formation and alignment at the back what their run plays are going to be. And that is embarrassing at the NFL level. And it's embarrassing to have done it now for 2.5 years, or 2 years, sorry, in 2 weeks on the run. And for your solution to be, we'll throw the ball more and we'll get into empty and Joe will figure it out. Okay, that's a somewhat solution. It's not a very creative solution, but it's somewhat of a solution to marry that with, once again, a terrible offensive line where the interior guys haven't upped the level at all. And Lyle Collins, frankly, just took the bag and hasn't been bothered to play. Lyle Collins has been one of the worst linemen in the league the first 2 weeks. It's just embarrassing. Jeff Schwartz actually had a really good former O-lineman in a bunch of different spots, had a really good thread on this in the week, going through the varying ways Lyle Collins is setting up for the pass and his different pass sets, and he has basically forfeited any sense of what is common practice in the NFL. And that, to me, is a player who is completely disengaged and not bothered because he's doing things that are inappropriate for certain concepts. And that means someone took a bag and then couldn't be bothered to play. So they have huge, huge, huge problems in terms of talent up front and the entire creativity of the offense. I think they will be okay because they have those special skill guys. They have the special quarterback, but it is about as bleak as it gets. And since they have upped the playoffs, I can't even remember how many teams it is off the top of my head. Since they changed the playoff format, if you go 0-2, you do not make the playoffs. So they are just in a massive, massive hole now.
And they're in an even bigger hole potentially next week when they play the Jets. And that offensive line for the Bengals looks exactly the same as last year, as you've said. I can't wait to see what's going to happen with Zach Taylor and Robert Saleh next week. Is there anything else go ahead.
The only thing that's going in the Bengals' favor is that every team in the AFC North lost today. I mean, clearly the Ravens are substantially better than them at the moment. They just had a disastrous fourth quarter, right, and a pretty awful second half all around. But if you take the full Jets game and the first three quarters of the game against the Dolphins today, it's not even close who the best team is in the AFC North. So that's the only thing going for the Bengals, is that everyone is bad. But yeah, since they changed the playoff format to 14 teams, no one who's gone 0-2 has made the playoffs. They would have to break with, admittedly, a short tendency to get in there, and it's pretty grim.
And for the Cowboys, there's probably an alternative reality where Jerry Jones picked up Jimmy Garoppolo on Tuesday, and we're now talking about a different situation. And we'll talk about them next week. If they win another game, I will discuss time in the Cowboys. Is there anything else to say to you on a crazy Sunday? I mean, like, the Cardinals won in overtime while we were recording, yeah. Ollie, as well. And for me, you gotta give, like, Aiden Hutchinson 3 sacks today. He was born to play in this league, but the fact that he gets to play in his home state you can see it in his emotion on his play as well. And the Lions, man, looking all right, aren't they, Sim Brown?
Well, the offense is insane. I mean, they just whooped the Cardinals, uses the Commanders' defensive front today, and they have one of the best offensive lines in the league, one of the 2-3 best in the league, and three of them are out, both tackles and interior guy out, and they still just crushed everyone. That those skill position guys are as good as it gets. They still got Jameson Williams to come back. They're all under 26. It's they've done a rebuild appropriately. They've done it properly. You can see kind of the proper direction of it now, and they are explosive enough to give anyone a really scary week. And I would not be stunned to see them win 9-10 games. I think they are good enough to do that now. So that's now. Kyler was obviously out of his mind. I really enjoyed so just some all-time stuff from Cliff down the stretch, where Cliff is like high-fiving everyone as if he did anything in the game, when his quarterback's holding onto the ball for 20 seconds and running 84 yards on 2-point conversions, or they're getting delay of games down, you know, on the goal line to win the game. And then he's high-fiving everyone as though the play he called meant anything, when his quarterback's running around all over the place and making magic happen. He's the worst.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear Simon Clancy's thoughts and Cliff Kingsbury on the Gridiron Show tomorrow. It's going to be fun. That's at 4 o'clock live. And for anyone listening to this or watching this, check out the link, beer52.com/gridiron. All you got to do is pay postage and packaging, and you can drink the same beer that we're drinking. This is really nice, man. Really, really nice. And again, big shout out to Beer 52. This has been fun. We'll have to do this next week, Ollie.
Yes, I'll catch you next week.
Catch you next week.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.